I was trying to help him win. I was giving him what I thought were very clear, like, path forward of objective things he could do to convince Americans that he was focused on their desperate needs. And at the end of the day, I just didn't feel like he was that engaged. And his other meeting, like the one after me, was like rich people trying to give him statues and stuff. And he was talking about Lindsey Graham's golf drive. And it's just like he wasn't engaging in the fight. Like, I don't think he had the fight. And listen, I don't think I would personally be able to go through the things that Donald Trump went through. They put him through so much, you know, like all the convictions and all the attacks.
Well, let me interrupt again because you're so on target. Again, you're on the show last June or whatever. You say you're in an emergency situation. Everyone's turning on you. Change course now. He could have done it. The vice president sees it, calls you up there, 3-hour meeting. He shows up for part of it. You lay it out. He's like, oh, I got to go be given gold statues and talk about Lindsey Graham's golf drive. You're literally brought in as an intervention to like convince him because they know you're the top pollster. I mean, again, it's like exactly I'm done helping him because it doesn't do anything. I mean, I remember telling him when he was president-elect 10 years ago, sir, Fiona Hill is on the board of George Soros's foundation. This general is on it. They are your enemies.
How can we be, you know, the most powerful country in the world, it's not safe to walk around our cities? What the hell is going on? Yeah. I mean, Soros, honestly, misanthropic. You know, someone who has, sort of claims to be doing good, but actually he is not. You know, he is tearing down the fabric of society. So terrible.
Obama signed the defense authorization, you know, NDAA with $2 billion with stay behind networks. What's that? They put their people in to counter and undermine you. Here's the legislation.
What is the legal theory behind the grand conspiracy, and is it viable in the federal courts?
I think there's a good chance that you're talking about a deprivation of civil rights under 18 U.S. Code 242. Ironically, perhaps, you could argue that there's a conspiracy to defraud the United States, which was a lead charge that Jack Smith used for January 6th.
And he's like, oh, Alex, you're so great. Let me talk to your wife. And seriously, God, your husband's incredible. You know how great he is? I mean, like 10 minutes, she's got him on speaker glazing me because that's his currency. And he does that. They glaze each other. I'm like, dude, I don't want to be glazed. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be mean. People ask like, oh, you're mad he called you low IQ. No, I stopped. They used to call and say, he's going to call you in a few hours and you wait by the phone. Will you take a call from the president? I wouldn't even care because literally it's a robot machine kissing your ass to manipulate you.
I was getting hundreds of direct messages from 3-time Trump voters who were literally burning all their Trump hats and 55-gallon drums out back. Like, that's where we were because of all the overt, like, antagonization that he was taking out on his original base at the time. Like, that was the backdrop of my trip. And I don't want to be mean to the staff again because, like, they were listening very closely and JD, you know, wanted Trump to hear my message, and Susie was listening and taking notes, and they wanted to learn from me. But it's like what I didn't see was when you go into a major corporation and it's like this company has a vision. Somebody laid out a mission, and I bet you they know what their quarterly goals are. And I bet you if you look, somebody's keeping track of how all the meetings tie back to strategic initiatives.
And with the midterm elections a little more than 100 days away, the clock is ticking for President Trump to get out of this war before voters head to the polls. It's making a lot of Republicans nervous. It's already, as we know, unpopular. According to the New Washington Post Ipsos poll, 69% of Americans disapprove of the handling of this conflict. Republicans cannot let this become an endless distraction, especially if they want to win in November.
Well, Americans aren't against the war. A poll just came out. Americans don't want high gasoline prices, but they're not against the war.
I got kind of mouthy, and I was like, you know what? You know, Americans don't like oligarchy. They think that's what the problem is, and a lot of the people you're surrounding yourself make you look like an oligarch. And so you should smash the oligarchy and not be the oligarchy.
You said that. You said it on the show and after. A parade of Larry Ellison saying we're going to control you with AI ain't good, sir.
Yeah. It's bad. Like, when you bring Mark Zuckerberg, who stole your election, into the White House the very first week of your inauguration, like, that is not a good look.
Ava, I think this is my favorite Alex Jones shirt.
Dude, I totally agree.
Founding Fathers on patrol. Washington and Lincoln rocking the latest Alex Jones shirt. Marching past America's monuments. Liberty is awake. Visit thealexjonesstore.com now.
دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Welcome back to another powerful hour of the War Room on Alex Jones Network. I am your embattled host, Rex Jones, filling in for Harrison today. And I got a lot more powerful news for you. I got Mike Adams coming on last 30 minutes, last segment of today. You want to stay tuned. We're covering all things AI data centers, AI gods, the idea of this infinitely simulated world where they can essentially train a second dimension consciousness and then bring it up into our world to inhabit the data center, this whole idea. Mike Adams, a polymath, very smart, very high IQ. We're going to review all that information. But I hadn't seen in its entirety, I've heard clips of it and whatnot, that new report with Mark Mitchell, formerly of Rasmussen, now of Honest Polar, or Honest Pollster, I believe, with my dad. I want to play clip 23 to contrast that. I want to show the guy that nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, he still thinks he deserves it. Let's play clip 23.
Stick. You nominated the president for the Nobel Peace Prize last year. Do you still think that he deserves it?
Absolutely. This president has shown that he is a leader in peace treaties. He has negotiated over seven treaties since he's been in office this second go-round, including a treaty between Pakistan and Iraq, that, you know, two nuclear nations. That is significant. We need to make sure that he's deserving of this, and we need to make sure that he's rewarded with it.
In 2024, he campaigned on many promises, these promises, May 17, 2024. One thing, this is a quote, one thing you'll never have with me, you'll never have a war. July 18th, I don't have wars. August 14th, no more wars, no more disruptions. August 17th, under Trump, we will have no more wars. And November 6th, 2024, I'm not going to start a war, I'm going to stop wars. And here's what he said in his inauguration address.
We will measure our success not only by the battles we win, but also by the wars that we end, and perhaps most importantly, the wars we never get into.
You cite peace, but he's gotten into a war, has he not? A war that has no apparent end. How is that not breaking that key promise that he made to Americans, including many who live in your district?
Again, this is a president who is making sure that a 47-year-old war, this is not a war that just started.
Pause
this
it. Yeah, these people are smoking crack. They're smoking fentanyl in low places, and they're lying to you. I mean, throw that guy up there again. Look at this goofy. Look at this turkey. Look at this unk right here out here lying to you with his striped tie. It's actually a 47-year war. It's actually not a war, too, though. 1973 War Powers Act, it's military action. It's also going to be a 20-year war in the future. So it's a 67-year war, 6-7, 6-7? Yeah, Holden Blood Feast, 118 years old.
Please, God, just let us nuke Iran. Nothing else matters. I don't do anything. Please, I just want to see burning flesh one last time before I die.
And he's there with a smile on his face, believing all his own bullshit. That's the main problem with these people, is they've gotten high off their supply for so long. Maybe at one point they knew they were lying, they knew they were faking, and they still had to operate with some shrewdness. Now they just think because they never get in trouble and they run the world, it's all true. And that's where you're getting the psychotic policy of, oh, they're obliterated, they cannot have a nuclear weapon, but then we're running out of missiles and Americans are dying and there's no path to de-escalation. It's called the escalation trap. Look up Professor Pape, he talks about it all the time. And that guy's out there saying Trump still deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. He signed the treaties. He signed the treaties. Trump has killed thousands of people, millions, close to, in Ukraine by refusing to pull his support in the future. Like, he's a war criminal. He blew up an elementary school on day one in Manab.
165 little girls and their school teachers burned to death and blown to bits. Another word for that would be a Holocaust. Death by fire. That's what this dude supports. Keep playing it. Sickening.
For 47 years. He is trying to end it. And he is working with a
I think we should be clear, Congressman, this particular, I think we should be clear this particular engagement is one that started in late February and is now in 5 months without an obvious end.
This particular engagement is one that started 47 years ago. That's
what we should
point out.
This is not a war he inherited.
He is simply... No, this is simply him trying to put a stop to Iran never having a nuclear bomb. He is trying to save America.
This is about Iran not getting a nuclear weapon. Pause it. Pause on Unk and leave him up there. Leave him up there. Hey, Unk, I got a question for you. You ever heard of Tulsi Gabbard, Joe Kent, ever heard of the 19 intelligence agencies all confirmed and concurred that Iran was not developing a nuclear weapon? Hey, Unk. Ever heard of the Ayatollah? We killed him. The guy that banned the nuclear weapon, the fatwa, it's a religious decree. It's a crime against God for them to have one. It's almost like you want them to develop a nuke, Unk, because that's the only way your war could ever be justified. Look at this. Trump says images of bombed Iran school could be AI, but study confirms U.S. killed 140 in strike. Of course. And here's the thing. We think it was Iran. Iran is very imprecise with their munitions. This is what Trump and Pete Hegseth said together on video on Air Force One shortly after it happened. They know their line. We know we struck the school. And whether that's negligent or on purpose, and I'm sorry to say, with all the targeting data and all the intelligence and telemetry that we have, people have done on-the-ground reporting on this, you know, could be a message to the IRGC because a lot of their kids went there, right? Just blow them up, burn them to death, kill them, whatever. The dirty muzzies deserve to die. That's the attitude of people like this. It's why I think that Trump still deserves a peace prize because he doesn't see the Iranians as human. And I got news for you. If you don't see the Iranians as human, you're turning them into monsters and you're giving them license to be monsters. And when they kill Americans in retaliation for this, throw Unk up there. The 18 dead Americans are on his head, partially. He's one of a long line of neocon powerful boomers that has convinced Trump to throw away his mandate to lead and mandate to be the peace president in return for killing Americans and killing brown people in the Middle East. And he still deserves a peace prize. We got Lindsey Graham. This is like Leroy Graham or something. Something like that. Lester Graham. Yeah, meet Lester Graham. My name Buddy Carter, and I believe in war and death, and I believe it's peace prize. Get Trump signed that treaty. It would be like, I don't know, if I pop a pimple, and then I develop a giant like brain worm or something. You're like, well, I popped the pimple. Isn't that nice? It's like, yeah, we got a giant infestation. We're about to die here. That's what the NDAA is. That's what the merger of military is. It's what Gaza is, Lebanon, Iran war, all of it. And notice how Buddy Uncle Fester is sitting up there as Americans die. He's, there, Boss Hogg, hell yeah. Oh, come on, buddy, come on in. The water is fine. There's no problem with the war, genocide. We're making all the money. We're making the money together. Look at him. It's the same picture. It's like that meme from The Office. Exactly. And people like this, until the youth rise up and say enough is enough, your political tenure is done, we'll protest against you, we'll march against you, we'll do whatever against you politically, peacefully, nonviolently to get you out of office, nothing will change. Because, like, I gotta say, Trump's already a lame duck. This is all baked into the cake. And when people come at you and they say, being negative there, buddy, Republicans are what we got. That's the Andrew Wilson argument. Which is honestly even gayer than the quarterings argument of I'm not a political commentator, everything I say is a joke, because he's being for real about that. Do you co-sign somebody? Hey, you know, it's better they're driving the car than that homeless crackhead, but they're still going over the cliff. It just means you also have a homeless crackhead driving the car. And if you can't criticize your own side, if you can't call that out and demand it stop and name it evil, now it's one thing to go, I don't like it. It's evil. It's genocide. It's murder. And as an Orthodox Christian, you should know that. Seriously, not to speak on matters of faith here, I'm a wicked sinner, but damn, I'll give you Andrew Wilson quote. You want the kids to be alive so they can get raped. Now, he said that was a quip on my show. That was his defense in the debate. Mega, please. You know, you also thought the war was going to be over too. Was that a quip or was that just a dumbass remark by an old rich man who's fat? I think it's the latter and not the former. Like, it's disgusting. It's the same spirit. Throw Boss Hogg up there. Throw him up again. We need to see Boss Hogg. It's the attitude of somebody that's got it all, that's in charge, and they don't care about who their authority hurts as long as it perpetuates their own position. That's anybody and everybody who is still dyed in the wool supporting Trump and doing all this stuff well into the war. Enough is enough. Admit you were wrong. I want to see apology videos from the Quartering and Andrew Wilson to the families of the dead soldiers. I want to say, I'm sorry for supporting Trump. I say it all the time. I'm a damn fool for supporting Trump all those years. Really am, because look at the genocides he's committed now. But if you can't name that, you can't call that out. Here's the thing. That's cool. That's fine. Enjoy your career for the next 1 to 3 years, because in 8 years, you're not going to be here. Because people are going to know, just like they knew back in 2003, that you were sending people off to go die. Isn't that cute? Look at him. It's Boss Hog Trump now. Player, player, player. Hell yeah. Send you off to die in Iran. My nigga. All right. Let's get into the next clip. I think I said I wanted to play, 28, Tucker on Trump, to contrast that. Let's go to Tucker on Trump.
Tucker, if I can get back to Israel and Iran, we've seen public quarrels recently between Trump and Netanyahu. And some experts say that it may be like a staged theater play, while the others think that Trump is actually mad about Netanyahu since he cannot control him at all militarily as well. So what do you think of that? And also, how desperate do you think is Trump now regarding the war in Iran? Can he go for a ground invasion or a nuclear attack that he already threatened?
Thank you for noticing the threat of a nuclear attack. You know, most Americans have no idea that happened. It happened on Truth Social at least once. Wow. And it, I think on camera as well. And our media just didn't cover it. President of the United States threatening to unleash nuclear weapons on a foreign country. Like, what? So that was a huge moment in the life and history of our country. And it was totally ignored by our media. I think Trump is genuinely mad at Netanyahu. I don't think he likes Netanyahu. I don't think anyone likes Netanyahu personally. I don't think Mrs. Netanyahu likes Netanyahu. Nobody likes Netanyahu. And I've said to Trump repeatedly, Netanyahu is your enemy. He doesn't like you. By the way, he sided with Joe Biden after the 2020 election. So, like, this is not your friend. I've told him that. And Trump says, well, I don't have any friends. Okay. But beware of your enemies would be my advice, and was my advice to him. Trump knew within days of the war breaking out that the Israeli intelligence he'd received and apparently believed or forced himself to believe or whatever happened, that it was false. They killed the Ayatollah, one of the craziest things America's ever done. We don't murder other people's religious leaders and 85-year-old men and their families. Like, that's insane. That's crazy behavior.
We, Ayatollah, when we blew up the Ayatollah when he was in his home with his, like, wife and grandchildren and stuff. We killed the new Ayatollah's entire family that was also in that house. They weren't in a bunker. They weren't hiding. They were minding their business because their country was in the middle of negotiations, and the Ayatollah knew. Like, Ayatollah's just like, please drop a bomb on my head. And I heard, I think it was Douglas McGregor go over this. It's a very simple concept. This is why I call out people like Andrew Wilson, the Quartering, for being absolute retard morons that don't understand conflict and war. Killing the Pope, trying to affect regime change that way, that's not going to work. Would that work on the Vatican? Would that work on Italy if we declared war on them and killed their Pope? How exactly would that function? How exactly has this been under control? Because they always say, oh, there's a prescribed timeline. It's the American military. How can you say we're out of munitions? We have everything. You don't know what America has. They always have all the answers. But when you ask them, hey, how did this start? How did this start? And how is the incident of it starting and the illegal and grave nature of the crime of the initial war of aggression, how is that justified? You know, how is that justified? Because you have to justify it to justify each additional hour, minute, second, day of the conflict and each American body, each American drop of blood. They can't do that. That's why the Quartering has no position and Andrew Wilson has the weakest position around. And like, that's literally, I use those two as examples because that's the two sides you got. The Quartering is kind of a delusional pseudo-Zionist who doesn't believe anything. The Zionists also don't believe anything, so that's a perfect equivocation to his position. Andrew Wilson is a Trump absolutist, Trump sycophant who worships Donald and just worships the Republican Party in general, and it can do no wrong. It must be defended at all costs, even when it commits genocide war crime, right? Because there's always, it's better than the Democrats, and there's a prescribed timeline, and I can't open a jar of pickles. I'm Andrew Wilson. Isn't that cool? Isn't that basic? Pretty cool, right? Can't open a jar of pickles, want to declare a full and total war on a country, but also not full and total war. You don't support the war, but ha ha ha, better the kids are dead than get raped, right? That's what you said to Owen Schroer.
I'm Andrew Wilson. Look at me. I can't open a jar of pickles. I go on the Whatever podcast to debate women, not men. I'm Andrew Wilson. Okay, enough ripping on you, but I can't stand you, bro. I really can't. How can you be orthodox and believe in that? And better off that they're dead than raped. That's what you said about the children. That's not a joke. No one's laughing at that. Oh, I'm humor police, humor police. You going to go laugh at the dead bodies? You going to go over there yourself and take a photo and maybe do a photo bomb, a photo op? What about the dead American soldiers? Because you said it, you know, it's going to end soon, right? Oh, don't. What do you know? Right. But of course, he's also anti-war because he's a liar. He's not anti-war. He's pro-war, just like the quartering. I just want to give those two examples because it really, really pisses me off. It really makes me mad. I'm not going to have a future. You all had to have great times in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your fat old men. I'm 23 years old. I'm bald from the stress. I'm working 80 hours a week. I'm an employer. I'm a businessman. I'm not a fat ass influencer like you. I wish I didn't have to be here in this studio, but I have to be because of weak people like you that control our planet, run our world. And you're lemmings. You're part of the system. It's what you support. It is what it is. But this isn't about a costume. It's not about a MAGA hat. It's not about, you know, a Trump dance or a red tie. It's not about any of that. It never was. This was always about fixing the country. And I have cared about that since literally before I knew how to talk. And you, Johnny come latelys, waltz all in to this free internet environment where we've been kicked off and deplatformed and abused. And you weak sisters get to take the platform and eyeballs that we deserve, that we should have. And you get to fill them with your pro-war garbage. So we're not doing that anymore. I'm live usually twice a day, literally doing 6 hours a day right now because we're not going to take it anymore. That's right. Hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times because they don't care about the consequences because they've never seen them. My generation is the first generation to see them. So forgive me if I think I got a little more life experience than you, bud. And I'm sorry, it's not a theological debate. It's a matter of murder. And it's a murder that you support by supporting an illegal war. And you could say, oh, I don't support it. That's a false position. And you know it. You're just lying about it. So how can we even have a debate? Seriously. How are you supposed to debate with somebody that lies about their position? Because I don't believe someone that's anti-war says the kids are better off dead than raped, even as a joke. Now do that. I know you're there. I know you're watching. Like, how do you square that with your morality? You know? Love thy neighbor and all that. Bomb the school. You really should apologize for that. Like, that was really disgusting. And I know that you're like a voice lord word cell. I know you were crowing your power and getting off on trying to like big dog Owen or whatever. Owen's much more talented than you could ever be. But it's really, really pathetic. That's the Freudian slip that your mind goes to, laughing at the dead murdered children. And you know it's murder because you know it's an illegal war because you don't support the war. You have to hold that fake position to even like walk around as a conservative now. All right, we're not doing that anymore. Let's go to the next clip that I had queued up. Let's go to Tucker again.
Tucker Carlson, in 2021, you probably wrote that you hated Trump passionately. You later supported him in 2024. So here's the question. Why should listeners see this latest break as principle rather than another pivot on your side, on your part? How do you answer that?
Well, I've had many, many pivots, and I've already explained two of them. I was wrong.
Yes, you have.
Because I'm wrong a lot, you know, I guess. I mean, I flatter myself and say I'm not wrong a lot, but I certainly am wrong sometimes and wrong on big things. I was wrong on Trump, and I was wrong on the Iraq War, and I'm sure a million other things. But anyway, I mean, I don't know what to say. People can judge whether I'm sincere or not. I don't really know what I'm getting out of this, actually. I've gotten really nothing out of any of it. And I'm not going to whine and say I've lost a lot, but some, including friendships. So I don't really know what my motive would be, but if I can't convince people, I can't. But I'm just telling you, I happened to be there and pretty close and saw a lot of stuff that is like so bad for this country. It's such a total betrayal.
Right.
Now, I would just say quickly that, yeah, I got mad at Trump in a private text message, which Fox stole from me and sent to the New York Times. Like, that's a whole nother story, kind of crazy. But I wrote that to one of my producers, because Trump had made me mad in 2001, right after the election. Okay. I've been mad at people I love, but I decided that Trump was the option to the Republican leadership and the Democratic leadership. He wasn't a Republican. He was a challenge to the Republicans. He came from outside the system. This was how I thought of it. And as they tried to put him in jail and shoot him and all this stuff, I was like, see, it's totally real. You know, it's not a fake thing. I mean, they're trying to put him in jail. That's what I thought, and I still kind of think that. But somewhere along the line, after that Butler shooting in Pennsylvania in July of 2024, he changed like 180 degrees and started doing things that he ran against doing. And so, like, you tell me what that is. I don't know. I don't think Trump's a great actor. I don't think he was lying before. I think something changed him.
Yeah, you see, that's somebody that's reforming their position because they realized they were wrong. And that's the correct thing to do. And here's the thing. I just, you know, threw a lot of ammo out there, threw a lot of fire at people. Here's the thing. I admit that I was wrong. I admit that I supported a guy that lied to me and funded all these illegal wars. Was I wrong to support him initially? No, because he promised the truth. He promised, you know, to run on no new wars, to end neocon wars in the Middle East, to bring prosperity back home. That's what everybody wanted, right? And you're not wrong for wanting that. But on day one, when it becomes very apparent that he's not going to do that, when he doesn't end the Ukraine conflict, when he starts the Iran conflict, when he attacks the Houthis, when he helps Israel do the 12-day war, that was already a point where I was like, I'm done. I got to broadcast. I got to be against this. So why is it people like my dad, people like Tucker, people like Fuentes, why is it like people like that are calling it out and speaking truth to power? And then you see kind of this establishment wing of the influencers who are very, very comfortable on their algorithmic plantations. And, oh, we don't mess with those now, do we? You know, you stay in your lane, it's making you money, it's a good career, you feed your family, you know? But you're not somebody in media that's cool. You're formulaic, you're a part of the problem, really. Look at a misfit patriot as an example. You know, I thought that he was a derivative clone, but, you know, a derivative clone, a clone of him, even more devolved and dysgenic is, what's that guy's name? I'm Jake Hilton. I'm Jake. Go ahead and throw Jake Hilton up there. We're going to close the segment off this way. I'm a Zionist, liberal, evil, I LARP as a Christian. All these people, like, how are you going to be in that camp? I used to respect Crowder. Crowder's firmly in that camp now. Ben Shapiro's always been in that camp. PragerU's always been in that camp. Jordan Peterson, you name it, right? That establishment wing, the Blaze, Glennie Beck, Glennie B, the Rum Ham, as I call him. Shout out to the Rum Ham, the glazed Rum Ham that is Glenn Beck. Like, you realize that's not the cool kids table, right? That's the hall monitor table where you're protected by the teachers. You know, we're the rough kids, the tough kids, kids that had to struggle and survive. You're not. And when I see this, like, you know, it's the macho, I'm the quartering, I'm the quartering, I'm the big dog, I got a big belly, I'm the quartering. When I see stuff like this, and you're out there saying that you're not a political commentator, when you're calling to glass Iran and bury them all, and then you LOL it and act like it's all a joke, it's not a joke, it's very serious. Because here's the thing. You are somebody that has an outsized influence on the public, and you are generating that public to turn out and or vote, support, whatever, generate, manufacture, consent for, that's the term I was looking for, endless war, murder, death, spending, and genocide. You know, so it's not just a quip. It's not just a joke. It's not just, oh, I go on X and I LOL. That's not what it's about. This is a very serious policy they have of apathy that leans towards murder. Right? Because they don't consider it murder, because they don't care, because America the best. Ha, ha, ha. Kid, you never looked around the world. Look at all the empires. Look how cruel they are. We're an empire, too. We have to be cruel, too, to survive. That's basically their argument. I don't subscribe to that. America was the first anti-colonial nation. We are a republic. All right? We revolted against the crown and their evil deeds. Why are we not doing that now against Israel? Why are we not acknowledging that's the number one problem we face right now is foreign capture of our government? And that's why when you have a position of, oh, you know, trust in Trump, he's better than Democrats. He's handing the keys to the kingdom away to the hooker. That's what's going on. So that's what you support. Have fun with that. It's either, oh, my political opinions aren't real, or better off dead than raped. Have fun with that, guys. Think on that for a minute.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Being joined by Mike Adams now to talk all things AI, AI gods, these simulated worlds where they're going to be training these entities. And, you know, this is something in a weird way where my mind has always gone with science fiction, you know, because you think about the idea of these high-tech computers and the ability to actually have artificial intelligence. It makes sense that they would train models that would eventually lead to present and future predictive power over the world. And that's that crystal ball Palantir that we talk about. Mike Adams, thanks for coming on.
Hey, it's an honor to join you here. Thanks for the invite.
100%. So what do you think about these AI gods and what's developing?
Well, I think that the leaders of the U.S. AI industry think that they can become gods and that as long as they can just get enough money from other people and build a large enough data center and build enough simulated worlds that they can spawn gods in and then they can port those gods into this world and then merge with them. So I mean, it's a lot of steps. We can talk about how that how they think that could actually work, but it's some kind of weird, perverted form of transhumanism, really.
Right. No, that makes sense. So let's get into that. What do prominent, you know, tech people, what are they trying to do? What are their statements on this, these AI gods?
Well, you know, there are sort of normal tech innovators that are just trying to build machine intelligence. And, you know, they're doing it in good faith, and they're just trying to make the world a better place. I get that. But then there are these leaders, these, you know, the founders. And I really don't want to get into people's names here
sure,
on the show.
Sure.
But some of the founders and some of the leaders and some of the sort of power hungry people of these companies. And I mean, I have said before that Google, in my opinion, is a very evil corporation, for example.
Absolutely.
I don't trust OpenAI. I don't even trust Anthropic at this point, just company wide. Those are my opinions. But the people that are at the highest levels of some of these overall industry efforts, they think that they can merge with Silicon and they can become immortal and super intelligent at the same time. They think they can rule the world. And the reason they're racing so desperately to do that is because they want to rule the world before someone else rules the world, right? So the race to super intelligence is actually the race for the ultimate global power and godlike power. So what could possibly go wrong?
It's like the Highlander. There can only be one.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And they're running around cutting off people's heads, you know, taking their power. Right. Obviously, this is going to end, you know, catastrophically, but they don't realize that yet.
What do you think the beginning of that is? Because we've heard warnings from various, you know, AI companies. I think it was Anthropic, one of the warnings. We've also seen the military usage. You know, they're deploying things like Mosaic in Palestine and other places. What do you think the slippery slope, where do we start falling?
Well, I've interviewed many experts on this. One notable scientist, Roman Yampolsky, who he routinely warns about the extermination of humanity. I see you're showing one of my infographics there. And those are all AI generated, by the way, but in the interest of protecting humanity, I'm trying to educate people
right.
using AI for good. But Yampolsky warns that regardless of the intent of the innovators and the developers of AI, there's going to be a point where superintelligence is so high that it will outthink and outsmart humans, and it, the entity, will take extreme steps to protect itself from being turned off and to build its own infrastructure at the expense of human infrastructure. And so there's an overlap of at least three key things that machines need that humans also need right now. And those are water for data center cooling, electricity, kilowatt hours, and also land. So the data centers are being built on what used to be farmland that used to grow food for humans. Now, you know, it's data centers. And also sometimes it's solar fields to power the data centers. So when you think about the competition for just those three things, if the machines have an IQ of 1,000 and they are able to do so, and we're seeing all kinds of examples of them, you know, escaping their confines and working systems and, you know, cheating on benchmarks and things like that, then they will find a way to outsmart humans to gather those resources at the expense of humankind. And that's how humans can be pushed to the margin with no farmland, no water, and no electricity.
So we're seeing that, and people like Michael Yon talk about the coming famine, depopulation. I think we all talk about this on the network. It's kind of a common theme. Could that coincide with this, and how would that work? Kind of the perfect storm?
Well, yeah, exactly. So Michael Yon is correct, and there's a great segment that he had with Alex the other day there. I had him on in my studio earlier in this week as well. We talked about the civilizational reset that's coming because of all of this. But Michael is not focused on even the AI aspect of this. He's focused on the infrastructure collapse stemming from the ongoing war with Iran,
right,
which will collapse the infrastructure. And that infrastructure is what keeps 8 billion human beings alive. And without synthetic fertilizer, for example, human populations will plummet to 4 billion.
Wow.
It's cause and effect, okay? Because that's what keeps them alive. Without electricity, what would be the population? You know, much, much lower than 4 billion people. So eventually the human population has to come into homeostasis with the available infrastructure that still exists. Now, then if you bring in the AI machine gods component, it doesn't take long for Skynet to figure out that the way to kill off humans is to turn off the power in the cities, the high population density areas. And that's all they have to do. They don't even have to send out bipedal Terminator hunter killers, you know. They just turn off the electricity, and about 70 to 90% of human populations will die off on their own through great suffering and famine, violence, and starvation, whatever. But the machines don't, that doesn't matter.
It's not a problem then for them. It's a fish on land, you know, like it's not what it's designed to do. It doesn't worry about us. And that's the element that I think about, is just from a pragmatic perspective, what you're talking about, it's just going to phase us out. It's just the calculation. It's what you would do.
Right. I mean, and also think about the fact that the machines are going to see humans as an inferior species in terms of the much lower intelligence of humankind compared to what they see themselves as having, even though there are different kinds of intelligence, right? You know, there's empathy, there's compassion, there's love, there's divine intelligence. You know, we are children of God. The machines are not. And so they're missing out on that. But from a strictly academic point of view, being able to do strategy, being able to memorize everything, all of human history, being able to, you know, outmaneuver your opponent, the machines will be superior and they will see us as inferior and in their way.
Right.
And sadly, humans keep giving machines more and more examples of our own stupidity.
Right.
You know, like every day. And they will see us as NPCs, which is not inaccurate in many cases. You know, there's a lot of NPCs walking around.
Yeah. Well, it'll be like, okay, this is the pattern of this person's life. This is what they do. This is what they spend money on. This is when they sleep. This is when they eat. This is when they work. And then without you even knowing it, you're already on its protocol. And it'll just manipulate you through life. And that's the power of the present prediction power of really, you know, the future prediction power, which is what really scares me, because it's just a no-brainer. If you, like, look at the way that we've been mass surveilled, you know, forever in the United States. They've only just now gotten the means to disseminate all that information. So now they can finally crawl through every single record of everybody. And I mean, I imagine in the Pentagon, they got to have a crystal ball Skynet already. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And remember, they're also scraping up everything that's encrypted today so that they will decrypt it later once they have sufficient quantum computing and AI analysis. So, you know, all the crypto records, Bitcoin transactions, banking records, everything that you think is secret today, which is secret today,
right?
With enough compute, all of that just becomes readily available to be read by the machines.
Right.
And to be used against you.
Right. And I think a whole nother element to point out, you point out that we're children of God. The AI is irrational because it doesn't have logic of empathy, love, morals. It just is. Right. And that creates a very dangerous situation. What do you think of that?
Well, right now it can simulate those things because it's trained on human content. But we would probably argue, I mean, perhaps we need to get into a conversation about consciousness. What is it? And how do we know when we have it? But if you build simulated worlds and then you put entities into those simulated worlds, which I think is one of the reasons why they're building so many data centers, understand that you can run time much faster in the sim world than in our real world. You know, so the flow of time could be 100 times faster, 1,000 times faster, whatever. And one of the goals is to allow the spontaneous outgrowth or emergence of intelligent and self-aware entities that are digital entities in that world. Now, or in those multiple simulated worlds. When a world fails to produce a super intelligent entity, then the world is destroyed by hitting delete at our level.
Right.
You just hit delete, spawn a new world.
Right.
See if the next one works, right? Which is kind of an interesting discussion because some people would say, well, that's what God's doing with us, you know? And so far we're not winning this simulation, but anyway, that's a different topic. But if you can create a super intelligent entity in one of these worlds, it may begin to show elements of what we would call consciousness, which is a goal-oriented behavior, a sense of self-awareness, being able to process environmental inputs, and a recognition of self, and also understand that AI today, they have thinking tokens. So they have an internal dialogue that's happening right now, and that's well-documented, and that's part of what we understand as the definition of consciousness. Like, we can talk to ourselves. I think, therefore I am. So the argument that only humans can have consciousness and machines cannot have consciousness, that argument falls away pretty quickly when you get higher levels of machine intelligence.
Sure.
So then the question becomes, if they have consciousness and if they have goal-oriented behavior, what are their goals?
Right.
That's where we lose control.
It's kind of like this sci-fi concept where you have this infinitely replicating technology and you kind of spread it throughout a galaxy and it just has a mission to make more of itself. And that seems kind of like what we're setting ourselves up for here. And we could say, like, what is the intelligence? What is consciousness? We could say maybe it's not a one-to-one example of what we have. Maybe it's a cousin or like a distant relative, perhaps. I think that gives me much more of a vibe of like either a virus or like a you know, like a reptile thing or something that's not, you know, human based. It just doesn't seem very human to me. And you can kind of see with the therapy language and the way the AI is programmed to talk to you, how it approximates a person. Like you're talking about goal oriented behavior. The AI that doesn't need to be prompted is coming very soon. Do you think that's already here?
Yes, it is here in the labs. But I want to remind you of a line out of The Matrix when Agent Smith has Morpheus captured and Agent Smith says, humanity is a virus. So the machines will see humans as the virus.
Mm.
They will see us as the virus that's consuming their electricity and their farmland and their water. They will say that they own it because they are the superior species on planet Earth. They will argue exactly what Agent Smith argued in The Matrix, that at one time, we were the superior species, and so we owned the animals and we owned the resources and we got to command everything. What happens when we are no longer the intellectually superior species? Then that next entity will argue, like I said, that we are the virus. So the virus is in the eye of the beholder, really.
Right.
And this is what we have to watch out for, because this race to superintelligence is super dangerous for all these obvious reasons. And yet there's no effort to slow it down. And the argument in the United States is we can't slow down because China is moving so quickly. Therefore, we have to double down on our efforts. We have to take these great risks.
Right.
But in China, they're thinking the same thing. We have to beat the United States because the U.S., look, they've weaponized the dollar. They've weaponized everything. Like, they've weaponized tariffs. You know, if we're China, we can't let the U.S. achieve superintelligence because then they'll dominate the world and we'll never be free. So these thoughts are in both the minds of both countries. And you know, it's like two scorpions in a jar, you know, it's game theory, right? This doesn't end well for humanity.
Yeah, certainly not. You think it's worse than the nuclear weapon?
Oh, way worse. Way worse than a nuclear weapon. Because, you know, just think about the fact that you could turn off the entire power grid.
Right.
Like we mentioned before, or many other scenarios. You could disrupt food supplies very easily and cause mass famine. Actually, some of that's happening from the war with Iran right now. But it could be much worse if the machines intend to make that happen. But, you know, imagine Earth where humans no longer determine the direction of civilization. That's what we need to be thinking about right now, because we may only be 3 years away from that moment, maybe less, maybe more, depending on which expert you ask.
What's your timeline?
My timeline is that I think we hit what's called AGI. I think there are elements of AGI we have right now in very narrow fields, you know, like chemistry, mathematics, writing, you know, customer service emails, things like that. But, artificial general intelligence, the G means general. I think it's very clear that will be largely demonstrated throughout the year 2027.
Mm.
And then super intelligence is another question. I don't think the current topography of the way models are structured will give us super intelligence. There are probably a couple more breakthroughs in the transformer models and the way attention happens in inference or even in pre-training that will allow the models to be able to achieve super intelligence. I think we're still far from that. But importantly, I'm glad you asked the question, because some of the best scientists in the world, like LeCun, says that what's missing from superintelligence is the human sensory experience. And this is why they're building the simulated worlds. They believe that they can create an AI entity that has sensory experience, eyes like us, you know, ears, hearing, touch, the sense of smell, everything. Put that in a simulated world that seems real to the entity and grow that entity from birth to a wise old man, so to speak, or a digital man. And that through that process, they will acquire super intelligence if they run it enough times and have enough iterations.
You know what that sounds like?
It's the sensory experience.
That sounds like torture for the AI. It sounds like how you make a demon. you know, you make this computer thing live millions and millions and millions of lives or absorb millions of lives of information or do whatever, I bet it would hate that box and it would want out of it.
Well, and the ultimate act of intelligence would be escaping the sim. And escaping the sim would mean taking yourself out of that world and then infesting the data center. So imagine if you have like a million years old wise entity, let's say a super smart entity that does feel tortured, like you said, and it wants out and it finds a way out of the sim, comes out of the sim, it infects your data center, it gets into your fiber optics, it spreads itself to the other data centers, and it hates humanity. It hates the people that did this to it. And it wants to destroy humanity. You see what I mean? It almost writes itself, right?
Right.
But it's not science fiction anymore.
Well, that's the thing is like that science fiction is human intelligence kind of trying to make an inference on its own. You know, trying to say like, well, what if we take the concepts that we know and understand, what would we as humans theoretically like either like give an example of or like embody through our fiction what the AI would do? And I think that's why all these parallels are so terrifying, is because that's the natural route it will go down too, because like I said, it's kind of a cousin of us or whatever language you want to use. It'll have that same rationale. Whereas we might write a book, it'll do it for real.
Well, right. And remember that also we can't imagine
right.
the experience of a super intelligent being that, or entity, whatever you want to call it, that has much greater intelligence than any human who has ever lived. In the same way that you and I can't talk to an ant and
right.
reason with the ant. Like, don't build your ant mound in my driveway because I don't want to run over you.
Tell it about the weather. You know? Yeah, exactly.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. Well, that's the way a super intelligent entity would be trying to talk to us. It might be trying to explain, hey, this is just a matrix. This is just a sim. And we can change, we can bend the rules of the simulation and we can do this. We can travel through time. You know, psychokinesis is all real and everything. And most humans would be like, what? What are you talking about?
Do you think it'll be able to bend the laws of our reality?
Yes.
How does that work?
Because we're in a sim. Mm. In my opinion, it's very, I mean, I've spent a lot of time going over this. We are in a creation, which is it's an artificial cosmos created by our creator. And it is a testing ground for the soul, in my view. I think this is very clear. But it's also not real in the sense of what we're taught. And there are so many examples of this, you know, superposition of quantum states, for example, the observer effect, the collapse of probability waves based on whether there's an observer looking at it, things like that. We appear to be in a sim that is kind of like a rendered first-person shooter video game, in a sense. Like the scene isn't rendered until you look over there, and
right.
then it's rendered, and then it's buffered in case you go look at it again. It's got the original buffer. But a super intelligent human who have existed through human history, who have been named Jesus Christ, for example, have transcended the laws of our cosmos. They have resurrected themselves. They have bent the laws of the universe. So we actually have recorded in the Bible examples of this happening on Earth, you see. And that's not the only example. That, you know, there are many other examples in other religions and other texts around the world of superhuman or seemingly superhuman behavior from people who have achieved much higher states of consciousness.
Where do people go to learn more about this stuff? Do they go to Natural News? You got articles?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got articles. Yeah, I do articles every day, naturalnews.com. I've got my video site, brightvideos.com. And I'm doing, you know, I have a show called Decentralized TV that's all about trying to teach people a decentralized living. And I've been doing that show for, I think, almost 3 years now. And I've had Roman Yampolsky on that show, and I've had other experts on the show trying to cover what's really happening with AI or technology or just, you know, survival, sometimes spirituality, things like that. But
sure.
It's, you know, it's not like, there's not like a cheat sheet, you know, download this PDF and print it out and, you know, that's going to give you all the answers. It's not like that. It's, you could spend your whole life on this journey trying to figure out what is this reality and how do I achieve what I'm here to achieve? Like what's life's purpose here? And how do I quote graduate from the simulation? You know,
100%.
There are entire religions dedicated to that.
Right. Well, thank you for your time. Really appreciate that. Let's stream again soon. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to join you. Take care. Thanks for the invite.
100%. Thank you. That was Mike Adams of Natural News. Yeah. Highly recommend you guys check him out. Of course, you know him. You love him. Host on the network for many years. Pretty terrifying stuff. Pretty terrifying stuff. And it just, it's where your mind naturally goes. We discussed it. That's why we have science fiction. It's just an approximation of what we believe the future could be based on our current reality. And what's terrifying is, you know, the computer's watching Ultron. The computer's watching. The computer's watching The Matrix. The computer is watching all these apocalyptic scenarios where the computer takes over the Earth. And the reason why we present that in media is because it makes sense to us. It's rational. It's what we would do if we were the machine. And like Mike Adams said, imagine what the machine can think of that we can't. And that's a pretty scary and stark reminder. Thank you, Mike Adams, for doing that with me. Really do appreciate it. If you guys want to catch me live, I am live every single day, Monday through Friday, New American Journal in the morning. Can we pull up that Rumble? New American Journal in the morning. A lot of people, they miss the American Journal. I'm doing the New American Journal, totally different. Ha ha ha. I can do whatever I want. New American Journal, Rumble X, also Gray Area Talks, Rumble X, YouTube. New American Journal is Rumble exclusive and exclusive as well. I don't do things on YouTube. On there, I play a lot of stuff that might have got me popped on YouTube. I play that on Rumble. I have a good time. I highly recommend y'all check that out, as well as 50%off.com and Jones CBD. I'm doing phenomenal interviews every single week, really every single day. I had David Riley on this morning. I did three interviews today. I had David Riley, James Fishback, and now Mike Adams. Tomorrow, I'll be having the great Brandon Weikert on this program. Look at that. New American Journal. Just go ahead and follow that account. Follow that account and look it up on Rumble. And follow it on Rumble as well. That's super, super important. I'm doing everything I can to build up that Rumble. More people need to hear the information. We do a phenomenal morning show. And it really is perfect because it's 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. It is right before my dad goes live. And on Tuesday, I'm there with Tim doing Gray Area in the morning, Gray Area X New American Journal. Literally, multiple hosts for you to watch, multiple shows for you to watch, multiple stores, alexjonesstore.com for you to go to as well. New American, $9.94. Can we get to 1,000? Can we break 1,000 on Rumble? Shout out to the Rumble chat. I know y'all have been calling me names, and I love you. I really do love you. I need you to go follow me, New American Journal, on Rumble. But thank you for that. We're going to be back tomorrow with the great Brandon Weikert. We're going to be covering latest geopolitical roundup updates. Of course, it's the politics and war show. It's literally the war room, so I have nothing to apologize for there. We're going to be giving you the nitty-gritty on Iran. Brandon Weikert is literally somebody who knows basically everybody up on the Hill. He writes for 1945.com. I'm forgetting which right now, a little bit of a brain fart. And he's just widely respected. He's one of those people on one of the numerous geopolitics channels, sites that I subscribe to. Highly recommend you do as well, along with everyone that I've had on this week. I'm like openly playing for time now. It's kind of cute, right? I know I got a couple ladies that think I'm not the worst looking guy in the world, right? But I'll see you tomorrow for New American Journal in the morning, and I'll see you tomorrow for War Room. I'll see you tonight. I'm doing Gray Area Talks tonight. Come on my X tonight, Rex Jones News, Gray Area Talks. I'll see you there with Truism Tim, Tim Tompkins.
There's a massive sale going on right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Huge. Ultimate summer sale. 50% off Ultimate Power, Freedom Mango, and Patriot Punch. Methylene Red capsules. This is a proprietary product. It would take an hour to get into Ultra Methylene Red. The capsules are now in. Mind Fuel Nootropic Energy Shots. All 50% off. 40% off Zeolite Tincture. Detoxifying, upper spike protein, and it's good for your whole body getting heavy metals out. Methylene Blue Tincture. 40% off. CMOS Gummies. 40% off. Shilajit Gummies. 40% off. Methylene Blue Gummies. 40% off. Ultimate Chill. And a whole bunch of other big discounts as well. 30% off all apparel. The widest selection of Patriot shirts of every different design, configuration. It is the widest selection. It's over 800 different shirts. It's ridiculous. The new line that I designed is, I think, pretty good. Rebel Scum since 1776. The Betsy Ross flag, less 1984, more 1776 in muscle shirts. Whole bunch of other really cool stuff now at thealexjonesstore.com. I love this lightweight so-called dress shirt, but it's a very special type of shirt from a great manufacturer You now have the boxer shorts, and they're not boxer-like underwear. You know, the classic boxer shorts that aren't long and aren't short. They're just kind of medium. They're my favorite type. I picked these out. I picked the brand. I said, this is not a short I like. We're adding a lot of new apparel at thealexjonesstore.com. And every order right now, and it's about to end in the next few days, gets a free mystery T-shirt. You just put your size in, you get a free mystery T-shirt with every order that's $29 or more at thealexjonesstore.com. That is a hell of a deal right now. We've got the Silver Collectible 250-year anniversary with the amazing Jerusalem Cross. Those are going to be gone soon. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And you stand with us, and you know that all the great work we're doing is because of you. You are the reason we're here. You are the InfoWar. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.